Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi, and a very good afternoon to you. It is wonderful to be in your company. It is Thursday. It is just gone 11:09 a.m. 11:09, coming to you live in our new slot on Chai FM, 11 to 12 on a Thursday. This is where you have to be with Judaism 101.9. I'm Rabbi Michael Katz, and it's an honor to be able to share some thoughts with you today. As we always do at the beginning of our time together on Judaism 101.9, we look back at kind of the foundations, the history of this period of time. As I've alluded to many, many times, we know that history doesn't only repeat itself, but if it's not learned from, it can come back to haunt you. But in a good and positive way, the things that are emblazoned on a particular time seem to have that type of energy that we can be involved in, that we are involved in, and that kind of surround us at a given time of the year. Things that are seasonal, and you know that it is classic Torah thought, because we're told that every year at a certain time we must celebrate Pesach, and every year at a certain time we have Rosh Hashanah. These things are time-bound. They come about in particular seasons, because that's the time when there's a time of forgiveness, or a time of, God forbid, mourning, and there's a time of joy, there's a time of simcha, a time of redemption. These things keep on coming back to us. We are living in amazing times now, in modern terms, times of great difficulty and in a certain regard a great deal of darkness, but times where we can reflect and look back at how history seems to repeat itself. And today is just one of those days, the 11th of Shvat. You know, in 1510, in the year 1510, the Jews of Colmar was then Germany, it's now part of France, 3 years after the request by the Council of Colmar, the emperor, who was Maximilian I, gave permission to expel the Jews. So you thought, or we thought, that anti-Semitism was something that was just in certain periods of time. No, anti-Semitism always there, always rearing its ugly head, always cropping up, whether it was in Germany or it was in France, anywhere in Europe. And as we see, doesn't matter where it is, but it rears its ugly head, and the community exerted every effort to secure the repeal of the decree of banishment from the emperor. And with the help of Rabbi Josselman of Rosheim, the leader of the Alsatian Jews — now the Alsatian, nothing to do with the dog Alsatian, but from Alsace — and the enforcement of the decree was postponed until 1512, when it came into effect. It also happens to be this day, the 11th of Shvat, is the day of the birth of a famous man by the name of the Chafetz Chaim. There are so many incredible, incredible stories and history about this great Jew, the Chafetz Chaim. And he was born in 1838. We know that he was a great Torah scholar. We know that he was a great Jewish leader. His name actually was Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan. He was born in 1838 and passed away in 1933. He was in the town of Radin in Poland, and he was the author of the Chafetz Chaim. That's where he got his name from. And the Chafetz Chaim was a name of a work of the evils of gossip and slander, and guidelines to proper speech. Chafetz Chaim, he who seeks out life. This was the name that he gave to his work, to his book. It's an interesting thing in Jewish tradition that very often the personality became known by what he had written. It was the words that he left behind. It was the incredible teachings that the Chafetz Chaim taught. Of course, he also was responsible for a classic work called the Mishnah Brura, Codification of Jewish Law, which many study and use as a guide for life. This unbelievably important figure in our more modern Jewish history, the Chafetz Chaim, was born on this day in 1838. So we have the negative. Jews were expelled from France, but we then have one of the greatest sons of Jewish thought and Jewish teaching, the Chafetz Chaim, born on this day, kind of swinging that all around. Did you know that tomorrow, the 12th of Shvat, marks the beginning of the Warsaw Ghetto Insurgency? It began in 1943. It was in January the 18th of 1943 that the Germans began their second deportation of the Jews from the Warsaw Ghetto, which led to the first instance of armed resistance. The deportation was halted within a few days, and due to their brave efforts, 3,000 of the 8,000 Jews whom the Nazis intended to deport at that time were saved. The Nazis retreated, and they returned 3 months later, at which time the real uprising of the Warsaw Ghetto actually began in earnest. So, again, a story of persecution, of Nazism, terrible things, but how the Jews stood up to it all, and with their sticks and stones and whatever they could muster, actually fought back in the most incredible piece of Jewish history, the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. The 13th of Shvat is the date on which we remember the Rebbetzin Shtena Sara Schneerson. 1942, she was the wife of the 5th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Shalom Ber Schneerson, the mother of the 6th Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok. And she lived through the upheavals of the first half of the 20th century. She fled the advancing front of World War I from the town of Lubavitch to Rostov, where her husband passed away in 1920 at the age of only 59. And in 1927, she witnessed the arrest of her son, the previous rabbi, by Stalin's henchmen. And the night he was taken away and sentenced to death for his efforts to keep Judaism alive throughout the Soviet Empire. Of course, that sentence was then commuted, and after Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok's release, the family resettled in Latvia and later Poland. And in 1940, they survived the bombing of Warsaw. They were rescued from Nazi-occupied from the Nazi-occupied city of Warsaw, and they emigrated to the United States, and the Rebbetzin Shtena Sara passed away in New York on the 13th of Shvat in 1942. It also happens to be that the 13th of Shvat, which is coming up on Shabbos, was the day on which Auschwitz was liberated. You know, they have this Holocaust Remembrance Day, which, of course, is commemorated strangely on January the 27th, but it was actually the 13th of Shvat that the Russian army arrived in Auschwitz, the most infamous of the Nazi death camps, and they liberated some 7,000 survivors, and those left behind as unfit to join the evacuation death march. Now, the date, therefore, the liberation of Auschwitz is a date of that release, that redemption, that geula. Of course, for some of those who survived the awful, awful, awful events of the Holocaust. The 15th of Shvat, which comes up on Monday, is the significant date of what people often call Tu B'Shvat. And it's about that I guess we're going to spend some time now thinking about the messages behind Tu B'Shvat, behind Chamisha Asar B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat. There are some who have a reluctance to call it Tu B'Shvat, but be that as it may, it is a date that is full of such very, very powerful and beautiful messages for each and every one of us to think about. And this is the time that we are thinking about, celebrating, and commemorating over this coming weekend. So we're going to be sharing on Judaism 101.9 a number of insights, a number of ideas, a number of thoughts around the 15th of Shvat, around trees, around fruit, around the concepts of or the meaning as to why the 15th of Shvat is called the New Year of the Trees. And is that a fitting name? Is it a right name? Is it a time when the trees get up and celebrate their new year, where they'll be commemorating a brand new year? Or is it something, of course, that has much deeper messages for each and every one of us? Now, there's something special about Thursdays and Fridays at the Family Bakehouse. Well, today's Thursday, tomorrow's Friday, so something special about these days.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Welcome back. This is Rabbi Michael Katz here with you, and we're on Judaism 101.9. It is great to be sharing some thoughts with you, and particularly around the upcoming festival of Tu Bishvat, or Chamishasa Bishvat, the 15th of Shvat, which is known as the New Year for trees. Now, how do trees get a new year, and what is this actually all about? Well, according to Torah law, there is a seven-year agricultural cycle, concluding with the Shemitah year, the sabbatical year. When the temple stood in Yerushalayim, on years 1, 2, 4, and 5 of the cycle, farmers were required to separate a tenth of their produce and to eat it in Yerushalayim, in Jerusalem. This tithe was called Maaser Sheni, or the second tithe, because it's in addition to the 2% which must be given to the Kohen, and then 10% which has to be given to the Levium, to the Levites. On the third and the sixth years of the cycle, instead of the owners eating the Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, they gave the second tithe to the poor, who were permitted to consume it wherever they wished. So it was actually something that happened every year, but just there was a difference in which year of the cycle it was, whether the owners ate it or whether it had to be given to the poor. In the Shemitah year, no tithes were separated, and all the produce which grows during this year was ownerless and was free for anyone to come and take. Now, how do they work it out, or how does it work out? How does it turn out according to Jewish calculations that the 15th of Shvat is the day of the new year for the trees? How does it, what has it got to do with this, these tithes? So it became vital to know and to ascertain when the new year started for this produce. Our rabbis established that a fruit which blossomed before the 15th of Shvat was produce of the previous year, and if it blossomed afterwards, it was produce of the new year. And why was this? Well, in the Mediterranean regions, in the regions, of course, of Eretz Yisrael, of the land of Israel, the rainy season begins with the festival of Sukkot. You know, everything is determined on Rosh Hashanah, except we wait for Sukkot for the determination of how much water, how much rainfall there is going to be. And it takes approximately 4 months from Sukkot, which was on the 15th of Tishrei, until the 15th of Shvat, in other words, for the rains of the new year to saturate the soil and the trees and produce fruit. All fruit which blossomed beforehand, therefore, is a product of the rains of the previous year, and are tied together with the crops of the previous years. Isn't that fascinating? Today marks the day on which it was determined that the brachas, the blessings of the new year, especially pertaining to water and to fruit and to trees and to growth and to agriculture, would actually be starting from Tu Bishvat, from Chamishasa Bishvat, from Sunday night and Monday. That's the date. And although the day is Rosh Hashanah for the trees, there is a special significance for us because Torah tells us, Ki Adam Eitz HaSadehu, man is compared to a tree. And so there are so many things that we need to learn, that we need to understand in this beautiful idea and image of the trees, and particularly fruit trees, for each and every one of us as we are compared. And Torah's comparisons are not just thumbsucks. They're not just there to try and be cute, to try and give us an image, but they are really masterfully crafted into our thought process and into the process of Torah thinking of how much there is that we can garner, that we can learn, and that we can understand when it comes to trees. So let's begin. Let's think about the concept of a tree and the comparison to man. Well, there are so many. First of all, you know, a good solid tree has to have good solid roots. When those roots are sunken into the ground, and the further they reach, the more stable the tree becomes. You all know, and we all know, that the roots of trees are incredibly important for the tree to be able to survive, for it to be able to grow tall. These roots go down into the ground. They take all the nourishment and all the atmospheric influences from the soil in which the tree is planted, and they utilize that. and that stands them in good stead. But now the slightest little defect in the root can be felt in the fruit. So the roots give rise to the trunk of the tree, and then the growth of the tree, and then the branches of the tree, and then finally to the fruits of the tree. Those solid roots are of paramount importance. And we think about our Jewish education. We think about our upbringing. We think about family life. We think about all the things in the roots of each and every individual, and what a role, what a powerful and important dominant role they play in the effects, in what that person goes on to be, to become, to achieve, to accomplish, the kind of messaging that you get from good parenting, the kind of messages that you then can carry through into your becoming a parent, all comes from and starts with the roots. Well, there's analogy number one. The idea of trees in Torah literature, in Torah thought, of course, is not only the idea of the roots and the solid trunk, but the fact that the branches, you know, if we just think about the fact that our tribes are called Shvatim. Shvatim, a shevet, is also a branch. The branches that come out from the tree. Now, these branches, branches of life, of family, of Judaism, of community, and so on, are power reconstructs, or they actually take their strength from the trunk, from the central pillar of dominance of the trunk of the tree, and then move out in those different directions. But they are composed of, they're made of the same fiber, the same substance. And they, spreading out as they do, learn from the tree itself that the shade that they provide, the comfort that they provide, the ability that they provide for people to feel warmed in that environment, and the nurturing of each and every tree is something that we learn from Ki Ha'adam Etz Hasadeh, that man is the tree. Then, of course, we can start focusing on the fruit. Well, what are the fruits? Our own fruits are not only our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren, of whom we are so proud and who we know carry that flavor and that substance and that sweetness that was developed through the roots and then the trunk and into the branches and into the tree. But the fruits are the fruits of each and every individual. What are our fruits? Our mitzvahs, the mitzvot that we do, the things that we do, that we have, that we share with others, the products of this process of the roots and then the trunk and then the branches and the leaves and everything that goes into it, with the theme of the tree being this dominant and important image of how we are supposed to think about, figure our lives and the influence that we can have on others and with others through our fruits, through the mitzvot that we produce, our incredible influence in this world. And the fact is that when the wind blows, we see that the tree can sway, but when it's firmly rooted and when it's firmly solid with its solid trunk, the branches may swing to and fro in the wind, and but they will withstand the heaviest of storms if they have a strong trunk and there is strong roots, and the fruits that they produce will become even better when properly cared for, properly looked after, properly watered, properly harnessed, properly placed in the right position in the soil, and so on, will produce even better fruit. And this is the incredible and important image of the tree in our lives. Now, there are many customs that we have, and perhaps the observances and customs on Judaism 101.9 are necessary for us to understand today, on which it is customary to partake of fruit. Now, it was popularized as a day on which we plant trees, but actually that is a much more modern spin on the 15th of Shvat, on Tu B'Shvat, for which was cleverly adopted by those who wanted to make sure that there were forests in Israel, that there were trees planted in Israel, and seeing to the planting of trees, it became kind of synonymous with Tu B'Shvat. But really, in old classic Torah thinking, it's the day on which we partake of fruit, and particularly the fruits with which Israel is praised. As we have in Deuteronomy 8, it says that these fruits are olives, dates, grapes, figs, and pomegranates. Now, if tasting any of these fruit for the first time in the season, we remember that we need to say the bracha Shehechayanu. So it is on the 15th of Shvat, on Sunday night, Monday, that we should eat some fruit, and particularly, if we can, new fruits. We can say the bracha Shehechayanu, and particularly on the fruits with which Israel was blessed: olives, dates, grapes, figs, and pomegranates. And the blessing, by the way, is recited before the standard Ha'etz blessing that is recited on fruit. Because of the festive nature of this day, tachanun, penitential prayers, are not said in communities around the world on Sunday night and on Monday in honor of Chamisha Osa Bishvat, in honor of Tu B'Shvat. Now, there's a famous little story that is told about a tree, which perhaps gives us a beautiful image of what we are supposed to think about when we think about Ki'adam Etz HaSodeh, that man is like a tree in the field. And here I'd like to refer you to the Talmud in Tainit 5b, where it says, a man was traveling through the desert. He was hungry, he was thirsty, and tired. And he came upon a tree bearing luscious fruit and affording plenty of shade. And underneath this tree ran a spring of water. He ate hungrily from the fruit, he drank from the water, and he rested, we're told, beneath the shade. And when he was about to leave, he turned to the tree and he said, tree, O tree, ilan, ilan, tree, O tree, with what should I bless you? Should I bless you that your fruit be sweet? Your fruit is already sweet. Should I bless you that your shade be plentiful? Your shade is already plentiful. Should I bless you that a spring of water should run beneath you? A spring of water runs beneath you. There is one thing with which I can bless you. May it be God's will that all the trees planted from your seeds should be like you. What a beautiful little anecdote, a beautiful little story brought to us in the Talmud, brought to us in the Gemara, about the tree. Bless each other that your seeds should be able to grow into trees just like you. And this is the bracha of trees, and perhaps the most important message for Chamisha Osa B'Shvat, for Tu B'Shvat, which is coming up on Sunday night and on Monday.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
Hi and welcome back. Yes, it's great to be in your company. It's Rabbi Michael Katz. It's Judaism 101.9, and we are talking about trees and the image of trees. And perhaps it's interesting to note the number of times the trees are mentioned in the narrative in the Torah. Think about it, and let's have a look at how trees are like a pictorial theme that runs through the Torah. Quite amazingly, think about our very first image of Gan Eden, of the Garden of Eden, you know, the trees. Remember the trees that Adam and Eve were not supposed to eat from? God created Adam and Eve, placed them in the Garden of Eden in Gan Eden, and they were free to enjoy everything except for the tree of knowledge. They were forbidden to eat it lest they become like God and learn about evil. But the serpent, the snake, convinced Chava, Eve, to have some of the fruit and share it with Adam. Innocence lost, their eyes were opened to the possibility of sin, and they recognized that they were naked. Trees, first mention in Torah. There was the tree of life. After Adam and Eve gained knowledge, God said, behold, man has become like one of us, having the ability to know good and evil. And now, lest he stretch forth his hand and also take from the tree of life and eat it and live forever, God expelled Adam and Eve from the garden, stationed the kruvim, the blade of a revolving sword, at the entrance to guard the way to the tree that would have apparently provided Adam and Eve with everlasting light And so, number two, the tree of knowledge. Think about 10 generations later. The descendants of Adam and Chava, of Adam and Eve, man on earth, gets up to all sorts of mischief, involved in all sorts of terrible things, and God orders Noah, to make an ark, to make a boat, to set sail with all the animals. what happens then? We record that Noah sent a dove out on different missions, and the first time it left the ark, it returned without anything. The second time, it returned with an olive leaf. Olive leaf, get it? Olive tree, indicating new growth had begun to sprout. And the third time, it didn't return, and it was a sign that the land was starting to become possible to be inhabited again. Well, next we have a tree under which Abram served the angels. Remember that? When Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu, Abram and Sarah were entertaining guests, and remember they had this incredible home that they set up, which faced all ways, and they could help passers-by. After Avraham Avinu, after Abram had circumcised himself, he saw men approaching. He runs to give them hospitality. He gave them water to wash their feet, and he seated them where? Under a tree. And for many generations, the residents of Hebron kept a tradition regarding the identity of this tree, which is nearby where Avraham Avinu lived, and they assume that that is the tree under which Avraham Avinu, Abraham, sat all those thousands of years ago with the angels. And that's not all. Remember that it was under a tree that Yaakov Avinu buried Shechem's treasure. Now, what happened here? Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, was the father of 12 sons and one daughter, Dinah. When Dinah was raped by Shechem, the prince of Shechem, and her brothers, Shimon and Levi, we know, went without their father's permission, and they exacted revenge against all the citizens of that city. They also helped themselves to the treasure of the city, and Yaakov commanded his family to remove all idols and their accessories, which he buried under a tree near Shechem. They were then ready to travel to Beit El and sacrifice to God there. Alon Bachut, just a few verses later, we read that Devorah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried below Bet El, beneath the Alon. So he named it Alon Bachut. Now, what is an Alon? Rashi tells us that it is actually a plain. It is a reference to this open plain area. However, there are many others who say it was actually, you guessed it, a tree. Think about, if we go a little bit further forward from that, when Moshe Rabbeinu is first instructed to go into Mitzrayim and to save the Jews there, to bring them out of Golas, out of that exile, where is he first spoken to by the Malach, by the angel? Well, he stops, remember, near Har Sinai. That's what Torah tells us. And it was God appeared to Moshe in the form of a bush that was miraculously burning without being consumed. Think again, a tree. The tree that sweetened Morah, you know, that 10 days after Moshe Rabbeinu led the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, out of Egypt, they ran out of water and they only had a little, the bitter water that they could drink from. There was this place called Morah, Morah meaning bitter. People complained to Moshe and they said, what are we going to drink? He cried out to God, and God instructed him to take a piece of wood, which was actually the branch of an olive tree, we're told, fling it into the water, and the water became sweet. You can maybe try this at home, see if your olive branch will now take on a different meaning of making bitter things sweet. You know that there are 70 palms that are mentioned from Morah. They came to an oasis named Elim, where there were 12 springs of water, one for each tribe, and 70 date palms, corresponding to the 70 elders, each of whom sat under another tree to praise God. And Ibn Ezra quotes a tradition that there were actually 70 types of trees. Now, although not mentioned directly in Torah, the story of Yaakov's cedars is fascinating. Cedar trees of Jacob. Months after they left Egypt, and were deep into the desert wanderings, the Israelites constructed a magnificent traveling temple, the tabernacle, the Mishkan, of heavy beams that were held together with gold and silver fittings, covered with tapestries and skins. Where, pray, did they get the wood from? Cedar trees don't grow in deserts. The sages say that on their way down to Egypt, Yaakov had his sons plant cedar trees, which grew and flourished until they were needed, and that the Jews carried them with when they went out of Mitzrayim. Be back with you to sum up right after this.
Get back to basics with Judaism 101 with Rabbi Michael Katz.
So what is the ultimate idea of the 15th of Shvat? When we take fruit and we make blessings over the fruit, we say, Borei Pri Ha'etz, we say the blessing of the fruit of the tree. If it's a new fruit, as we said, we add the Brocha Shehechianu, that God has enabled us to reach this moment. But what is the idea of a brocha, of a blessing, in the first place? The idea of making a blessing is not only that we're giving God thanks for the fruit that he has provided us, for the trees that he's provided us, for the life that he's provided us. It's not just a thanksgiving, but it's praising God for giving that sustenance, Borei Pri Ha'etz, God who creates the fruit of the tree. We are opening with a blessing, a channel of blessing that comes down from heaven. It's not us who made the fruit. It's a recognition of the uniqueness, of the oneness, of the unity of God. Hashem Echad, God is everything. And God is in the fruit and in those trees and in the soil and in the world and in everything, good, bad, and ugly. God's presence is there. And it's enabling an opening between ourselves and God, that channel through which God's blessings can come into the world. Baruch atah Hashem, blessed are you, God. Melech ha'olam, God, you are the king of the whole world, of everything. Sometimes things are in an olam, olam meaning a world. Sometimes it is related to the word helem, which means it is hidden, hidden within everything. To be able to find, to see that godliness, and then to thank God for it, enables us to become kind of a partner with God in bringing the goodness and the wondrousness of all of these things into the world. And so as we make blessings, as we say these brachot, we are opening those channels of goodness, of nourishment, to be able to flourish, to be able to come into our world, and to be able to continue to give us the incredible nature, sustaining fruit, the trees, the gardens, the magnificence of the world around us, the water, the river, the streams, and everything that is within it. And so we too should be blessed. It is a date and a time of great blessing, bracha, for each and every one of us. That as we commemorate, as we think about the power and the strength of the trees and the blessings that they carry and the fruit that comes from them, it is not only about how much we had to give in tithes, as we explained right at the beginning in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple, but it is a lot to do with us understanding how important we are to nature, how important nature is to us, how important the world out there is to us, how important God's blessings are to us, and the magnificent world that God gave us to live in is in turn the opportunity for us to realize how important our strengths of family, of community, our deep roots are to each and every one of us. How as we look at the fruit out there and we enjoy it and it is part of our sustenance and part of our ability to function and to live in this beautiful world that God gave us, it is also important for us to realize how much we need to do to make sure that the fruit of our labors, our mitzvahs, and our children, and our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren, and our generations, and our institutions, and our shuls, and our communities, are to the very fiber and the survival and the future of the Jewish people. So please, God, you should have and enjoy multitudinal, great, and wonderful, magnificent blessings, brachas, on the day of great blessing for the trees, on the day of the new year for the trees, the regrowth, the rebirth, the reinvigoration. And we look forward to a great Chamisha Adar Bishvat. Just a final word on Sunday night. Please make sure that you attend a very important Siyum HaRambam, a time of completion of the learning, the Talmud, the laws of the Yad HaChazaka, the teachings of the Rambam. And it's on the 15th of Shvat. And of course, it is an opportunity to get together and to pay homage not only to the Rambam and to the Rebbe who encouraged the learning of Rambam on a regular basis. This is a time of great unity for Am Yisrael. It's a time for us to bring great and wonderful blessings upon ourselves, and hopefully we'll be able to do that Sunday evening at that special event. Go to Learn Rambam on the Chabad website in order to register, in order to see much more about what it's all about. We look forward to seeing you there. So I want to wish you a great rest of the week, a great Shabbat up ahead, and we look forward to a great Tu B'Shvat, a great Chamisha Asar B'Shvat coming up on Monday. Take care. Look forward to seeing you again, or being with you again, next week, same time, same place, 11 o'clock on Thursday for Judaism 101.9.